Hey, it's Craig. I just wanted to let you know that you can listen to Canadian History X early and ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Greetings and welcome to another episode of Canadian History X. The Romance of the Far Fur Country is a documentary that was made in 1919 and released in 1920 to coincide with the 250th anniversary of the Hudson's Bay Company. Released 2 years before Nanook of the North, this documentary, which is 2 hours long, could actually hold the distinction of being the first feature-length documentary. Now, of course, some things of it were staged. It was back in the 1920s, and in Nanook of the North, many things were staged. Nonetheless, it holds the distinction of being one of the first. So I talked with Kevin Nickel of the Winnipeg Film Group about restoring this documentary and releasing it for everybody to watch and enjoy. So let's go to that interview.
So I'm a filmmaker, I'm an independent filmmaker based in Winnipeg. And for years, I've been working on documentaries and really focused on Winnipeg documentaries and history of Winnipeg, partially because of some funding that was available for independent documentaries. And I was looking at how do I move beyond a local story, something about my city, and then trying to think about, okay, if I were interested in telling more of a national story, how could I approach a Canadian story and a Canadian history story? So I started looking at topics in Canadian history and thinking about, well, what are the big foundational chapters in Canadian history? And, you know, very quickly, Hudson's Bay Company came to mind because of its, you know, epic importance to Canadian history. So I started researching, you know, what are some of the films that have been done on the HBC? And I was hoping that there would be a gap somewhere in the filmography of the Hudson's Bay Company. You know, there had been some projects that had been done in the past, and I was hoping I could pick something about it, and then I could explore something that people hadn't really done recently. And so in my research, I came across a book by Peter Geller. The book is Northern Exposures. And basically, he researches and covers photography and cinema in the Canadian North in the first half of the 1900s. And so he was looking at the different photographers and projects that people like the Hudson's Bay Company crews had made. And in his book, he had a whole chapter on this project called The Romance of the Far Fur Country. And so in the I'm reading in his book, in Peter Geller's wonderful book, the description of the Hudson's Bay Company's desire to create this commemorative feature project on the work that they're doing, and kind of like a combination of a history and a contemporary scope of the Hudson's Bay Company's projects circa 1920. Because they were leading up to the 250th anniversary of the Hudson's Bay Company at that point. So my initiation into this and my discovery of it was reading this book, and I'm reading the chapter and I'm constantly looking into the footnotes and thinking, okay, where is this footage? Because the description is amazing. And that led me to, you know, track down the author, Peter Geller, and also talked with the local archives here in Winnipeg, the Hudson's Bay Company archives based in Winnipeg, and then eventually flying to London to actually see the footage, because at that point it was still kept at the BFI, British Film Institute, in London. So that's kind of like the first start to the conversation. Mm-hmm. And once my brother Chris, who's also a filmmaker, once we had seen the footage in London, then we really knew not only do we want to make a film about this, which led to our feature documentary, but we're also, we're really, really interested in bringing the fragments of Romance of the Far-Fur Country back to viewers, and also attempting to reconstruct it.
And so the reconstructing, what did that involve?
Right. So I guess to kind of set that up, in the film was shot in 1919 in anticipation for the big anniversary of 1920. And so when the Hudson's Bay Company released the film in 1920, and we're about a week away from the 100th anniversary, May 3rd was the premiere of the film in Winnipeg. The film was released and played in Winnipeg, and then it toured a little bit across the country. And so what happened was the film, the Hudson's Bay Company was also distributing its own film and was trying to figure out what to do with it. Once it had played a certain amount and had toured a certain amount, what they began to do was they began to cut up the film into shorter films. And they also made a UK version of the film. So there's a 90-minute version that was actually created as well. So as the, and of course, this is during the era when there really wasn't a sense of, we want to preserve a copy of our film, keep it in the library. Like in those early silent year films, like the studios and the distribution companies really didn't have a sense of needing to preserve copies. And so they're kind of cannibalizing their version of the film and making shorter versions of it. And then eventually all of the shorts that they had and all of the outtakes and all of the footage they had were eventually sent to the head office in London. That's where the HBC head office was. And that's kind of where it sat in pieces. All the pieces were there. And when the Hudson's Bay Company set up its Canadian division and began to transfer its archival holdings to Winnipeg, the textual materials came to Winnipeg first. So all of the records of the filmmaking process were brought to Winnipeg. But the film materials remained in London because they were being held by the BFI. And part of that was because they were nitrate materials, mm-hmm. So very dangerous materials. And so when the first batch of materials came in the early 70s to Winnipeg, the film had stayed in London. So there was records of it here in Winnipeg. Mm-hmm. And in the early part of the decade, like 2012, is when the nitrate reels were returned to Winnipeg. And this is at the time when I had traveled to London to look at the footage, and I was talking to the archives and saying, I would love to do something with this material. So the Hudson's Bay Company archives in Winnipeg, Maureen Dolanek was the person, the contact at the archives. So she made the formal request saying, can we get the materials back? Can we have them, you know, repatriated back to the archives in Canada where the rest of the Hudson's Bay Company materials were being held? So once that process was initiated, the Hudson's Bay Company archives of Winnipeg managed to raise the money to do a proper transfer, a 2K transfer of all that nitrate material. And once it was brought back to Winnipeg, I was, as an independent filmmaker, I was the first person in line to say, can I use that footage? They said yes. And then I began with consultation with Peter Geller, the person who had written the book that I talked about. Mm-hmm. We began that process of reconstructing, based on the records that we could find, the 1920 film, The Romance of the Far-Fur Country.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So looking at this film from 100 years ago, kind of the first feature-length documentary, did you see a lot of things from this film that you see even today, 100 years later, in documentary films and that made now?
Yeah, so what was interesting about this, the film, is the film language was still evolving at that point. And so the way they constructed their two-hour film was constructing it really episodically. So there's a number of parts that feel like self-contained shorts, and it's a journey story. So there's the filmmakers are traveling to Hudson's Bay sites across the country, and they're visiting different places along the way. So on the one hand, it's like a road movie, except traveling by ship and dog sled and canoe and so forth. So that common motif is there, but at the same time, we still have that the expectation that everything up to then had mostly been short films. Audiences were used to shorts, so there is some little breakaway moments where it feels like this seems like a short that is in the broader film that lives inside this longer film. And there are some moments that are clearly reenactments where they're little scripted little moments that replicate what the filmmakers wanted to communicate in the context of a story, where they're memories of life on the trap line, and then other times it's kind of a tutorial on how to lay a trap and how to trap beaver and so forth. So these are some of the things that are being constructed for the longer two-hour film.
What was it like to kind of work on this film that, you know, very few people have probably seen over the past 100 years?
Yeah, I mean, a pleasure, an honor in many ways to see this material. I have a very vivid memory of being in London, going to the archives, and, having had applied ahead of time and said, my brother Chris and I went, and we wanted to look at the film, so we had made our request, and we got these safety prints, and we put them on the Steenbeck machine. So we're watching, 16 millimeter safety prints of this footage, and we're watching this really amazing footage in black and white of the cameraman who's, cranking away on his silent film camera. It's just really interesting and fascinating. And then also seeing some of the indigenous people, a chief from Fort Chipewyan who is, communicating his frustration with the Canadian government over restrictions on trapping for his people, really, really dramatic, really, really clearly important footage that just needs to get outside of the archives and get to viewers. And then, so we watched initially the black and white footage, and then when we finally got to see the nitrate, the 35 millimeter process being the transfer, we could see the actual nitrate in its quite fragile form, but still be able to see the vivid tinting process that the Hudson's Bay Company had used, which was typical at that time. And so suddenly what had previously we just saw as black and white, we see the vibrant color that they were able to get with the 2K transfer. So suddenly it's color, not in the color sense that we watch on TV and movies now, but the tinting was just so vibrant compared to the black and white. So those are some of the things that stood out to me.
Where can people get the film? Because I guess you do sell it through DVD now?
Yeah, so the Winnipeg Film Group is my distributor, and that is a local artist-run co-op here in Winnipeg, and they've got a website where you can order the two-hour film, and I also have my feature documentary where we travel to the same locations where the Romance crew traveled in 1919. We returned to the same communities, and we went to see what's still there. Do people recognize anyone in the footage? And so both of those films are available through the Winnipeg Film Group. And the website is winnipegfilmgroup.com. Or you could very easily just search The Romance of the Farfur Country DVD, and you'll very quickly find a link to where to order the film.
I hope you enjoyed that interview with Kevin. And if you did, please give a rating and review. You can support the podcast by going to Patreon. Just go to patreon.com/CanadaEHX. You can email me at craig@canadax.com, and you can go to my website and find hundreds of articles on Canada's history at canadax.com. Thanks. We'll see you again next time.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone.
Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.